It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station from here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 38 degrees. A light rain is falling through the foggy mist. Out at the airport, they have northwest winds steady at 15, but gusting all the way up to 30, and they are down to 4 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain this afternoon, followed by rain and snow. That rain and snow is expected to continue on and off, well, through the weekend. Gusty winds to northwest winds to 20 up to 25 this afternoon, could gust as high as 35 this afternoon. Winds gusting as high as 40 tonight from the west. And for tomorrow, west winds just 5 to 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak City Council has approved $950,000 to repair the results of the broken water main. And Alaskans may have ballots in fewer native languages next year. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A Red Cross convoy makes its way from Gaza to Egypt at the Rafah border, while a crowd looks on amid news that Hamas was releasing more hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners and detainees held by Israel. Families on both sides of the Israel-Hamas war waiting for word that loved ones would be released during this pause in fighting. Israeli officials say two hostages were released by Hamas today. Roughly 10 additional hostages are expected to be released soon in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. NPR's Brian Mann is following developments from Tel Aviv.
Hamas said the two hostages already released have Russian citizenship and were let go as a courtesy to Russian President Vladimir Putin. This is the sixth and final day of a temporary truce between Hamas and Israel, hashed out by international mediators. Talks have been underway to extend the truce beyond today, but so far no deal has been struck. The Red Cross is expected to bring more Israelis out of captivity later tonight, and if all goes as planned, Palestinians held by Israel will then be freed.
NPR's Brian Mann reporting. In Arizona, two Republican county supervisors are facing criminal charges after refusing to certify their county's election results last year by the legal deadline. NPR's Hanzi Lo Wang reports the supervisors put close to 50,000 people's votes at risk.
Republican supervisors Tom Crosby and Peggy Judd of Arizona's Cochise County are charged with conspiring to delay the local counting of votes and interfering with the ability of the state's top election official to complete statewide counting last year. Crosby and Judd found no legitimate problems with the counts, but they refused to meet the state's legal deadline for certifying them. Many election watchers around the country fear this case could inspire people who want to cast doubt on election results to try to disrupt certification for next year's races. Arizona's state attorney general's office brought the charges and said in a statement, quote, repeated attempts to undermine our democracy are unacceptable. Hanzi Lo Wang, NPR News.
Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter's funeral service was today attended by her family and friends in her home parish in Plains, Georgia. Mrs. Carter died earlier this month at the age of 96. Delegations from around the world are getting ready for COP28. The 2023 climate change conference launches tomorrow in Dubai, overshadowed by the reality that countries are not on track to meet their long-standing goal of preventing the planet from warming by any more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. The Dow closes up 35 points, ending the day at 35,452. It's NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak City Council approved nearly $1 million at an emergency meeting last week to pay for a water main break that happened on November 3rd on the corner of Mill Bay Road and Kashabaroff Street. The line was breached by a subcontractor hired by telecommunications provider GCI called Utilities Technology Incorporated. Repairs are ongoing. City staff said in a report to the council, the contractor was drilling underneath roads for a previously approved project to dig tunnels for fiber optic cables. Matt Holmstrom is the city engineer. He says their drill was about 5 feet deeper than it was supposed to be.
And they ended up, I heard they were 7.5 feet deep is where they hit, is where the water line was. So they should have been closer to 2 feet instead of 7 feet.
The break led to a boil water notice for residents and businesses downtown, as well as discolored water in nearby homes. The city has worked with Brecken Construction since then to patch the water main and affected roads. Council members unanimously voted to set aside nearly $1 million for both the patch and future construction. Brecken was paid about $200,000 from the funds for the immediate patch to last through the winter. However, repairs in the spring are estimated to cost about $700,000. Holmstrom says the city is fronting the bill right now, but they expect insurance to accept their claims and work it out with GCI and their subcontractor.
We did not damage the water line, so I don't understand how we would be responsible.
Money for the repairs approved at last week's emergency meeting will come from the city's water utility fund and the city's general fund balance. Internet and phones are back online for residents in Wrangell cut off after last week's landslide. The power and phone company AP&T announced on Tuesday that all landlines and internet connection on the island's south side of the slide are functioning. The residents directly north of the slide zone are expected to be fully wired and operating with phone and internet services sometime today. Shannon McCarthy is a spokesperson for the State Department of Transportation. She says power was restored to all areas late Monday night. She said the landslide affected a large area between 11 Mile and 12 Mile of Zemovia Highway.
We do have a better estimate of the area impact, and it's around 38 acres of impacted area.
Residents are allowed to drive through the slide area during 3 time slots per day. McCarthy says those 30-minute slots will continue over the next couple of days to ensure the public's safety while road crews restore the damaged section of the highway. On Tuesday, crews cleared more debris on the north side of the slide and continued repairing shoulder embankments. Another focus this week is removing debris on both the up and downhill slopes of the Zemovia Highway, as well as strengthening the drainage area. McCarthy says that removing the debris will help stabilize the slide zone, and over time, the area will settle down.
That's why we're having a monitoring program. While our crews are working, we actually have people with eyes on the slope to see if it's going to shift on us, because we want to get people out of the zone if that's the case. And that's also the case with the public traveling on it.
Power and landline crews have worked constantly over the past 8 days to restore services to the south side of Wrangell Island since the slide occurred. The slide killed 4 residents. 2 are still missing. Alaska may have ballots in fewer native languages next year. A report required by the Voting Rights Act shows there are not enough speakers to justify printing ballots in Gwich'in. KUAC's Robin reports.
Section 203 of the Voting Rights Act requires that a state or political subdivision must provide language assistance during elections for voters who can't understand English well enough to participate. Wild Iris Anderson is the Alaska Division of Elections compliance manager and oversees that requirement.
Every 6 years, the census section 203 determinations come out, and that identifies what languages are spoken prominently in each state. With the most recent 2021 section 203 determinations, Gwich'in is no longer a prominent language.
Anderson says the census determined that Gwich'in speakers make up fewer than 5% of people in Alaska communities. Gwich'in Social and Cultural Institute of Alaska board member Yvonne Peter contests that data point.
We absolutely have more than 5% of the speakers in the communities of Arctic Village and Binitai, and likely in other Gwich'in speaking communities, with percentages that far surpass 5% of the population being Gwich'in speakers.
Peter is a tribal member of Arctic Village.
Arctic Village is known for high voter turnout. Like, our community shows up during election times. Having materials in our language where our voting age population is able to fully understand what's being asked of them to vote on is really important.
Division of Elections Anderson explains that the Section 203 determinations are based on populations of boroughs and census areas. For example, many Gwich'in speakers live in the Yukon-Koyukuk census area, the largest of 11 census areas in the state, where residents also speak English, Yupik, and other languages. She says because Gwich'in was measured at below 5%, the Division of Elections will not be actively translating future materials.
However, the materials that we have already translated, like our voter registration applications, absentee voting applications, and official election pamphlet materials from previous years, that we're going to keep it available on the website.
But there's absolutely still a need for materials to be translated into Dinjijukya, which is our language.
Yvonne Peters says he'd like to have Gwich'in language election materials available to voters like him in Alaska cities.
There's actually quite a few first language speakers of Dinjijukya who live in Fairbanks.
Anderson says the division will support Tagalog, six different Yupik dialects, and Northern Inupiaq with translated election materials in 2024. But they don't have the staff to support Hmong or other non-English languages spoken broadly in Alaska. She says the division can't work with volunteers, but there are other organizations who might be interested in publishing materials for non-English speakers.
I would be happy to discuss providing English materials to be translated.
She said if there are bilingual voters in Gwich'in-speaking communities who are willing to work with the division as bilingual outreach workers, they'll hire and train them to provide voter assistance. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The front doors of the Petersburg Middle and High Schools will be locked each day after classes begin. The change was implemented Monday morning and is meant to increase security at the schools. KFSK's Hannah Floor has more.
The decision to lock the front doors came after two separate threats were made by students to the school this fall. But secondary principal Brad King says that while those threats added a degree of urgency to the changes, he would have eventually made the change anyway.
When you look at the events that have occurred throughout the country for years and years, everybody is looking at their facilities and saying, okay, how can I make this work better? How can I make this safer?
Data from the Federal Bureau of Investigation shows that active shooter events, where one or more people are attempting to kill others in a public area, are more than 20 times more common than they were two decades ago. Staff at Petersburg High School and Mitkoff Middle School now lock the front doors each day after school starts at 8:05 a.m. The doors have newly installed doorbells, an intercom system, and cameras, which the staff use to assess visitors. King says most of the time, people coming by the school are dropping off forgotten lunches or sports gear that the staff are learning want to watch for.
We want to be aware of somebody who's dressed in such a way where they might be concealing something, and we want to see them more up close and personal before we open the door.
There are some complications. It's hard to break students of the friendly habit of just opening the door for anyone standing outside. And shop class is in a different building altogether. Administration is still figuring out how to make transition between those classes as smooth as possible.
It just takes a little bit of logistical work to make things like this happen. It's never perfectly comfortable for anybody, but it's, you know, it's the price we pay for trying to keep the kids as safe as possible.
K King says he'd like to continue increasing security. He says the school eventually plans to change the entryway so that the front doors are visible to office staff, and they don't have to rely on cameras to see people waiting outside. They also plan to install reflective glass on the windows of the first floor.
The only way you know that safety features are working is when nothing happens. And that's not the most overt indicator of success, but if nothing happens, we're doing pretty good.
Stedman Elementary School plans to lock its front doors as well. Principal Heather Kahn said in an email to parents on Monday that while there is no date set for the change, the equipment is on order. She noted that the majority of school districts in the United States lock their front doors for safety reasons. Money for the security upgrades comes from the school district's maintenance and security funds. Administration is hoping to get grant funding for future upgrades. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Flohr.
Golden Valley Electric Association's newly hired chief operating officer will be wrestling with several challenges. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, they include scheduling a shutdown date for the Healy 2 power plant and finding alternative sources to replace its power generation.
Travis Million has been on the job as Golden Valley's COO for a little over 2 months now, since he left his old job as chief executive of Glen Allen-based Copper Valley Electric.
I actually wasn't looking to leave Copper Valley Electric when Golden Valley came to me and kind of recruited me for this position.
Million says he's Golden Valley's first chief operating officer.
They didn't have anybody as a COO, but they had been evaluating whether to open that position up or not. And, you know, I guess the timing worked out well.
The position requires Million to oversee some of Golden Valley's most important functions, including power supply, operations, and engineering. And he also faces stiff challenges spelled out in the co-op's strategic generation plan.
There is a lot of complexities to it, a lot of moving parts. If this was a simple thing to do, it would have been done already.
Golden Valley's board passed the plan in June of 2022 to guide the co-op's partial transition from fossil fuels like coal and diesel to more renewable sources like wind, solar, and hydropower. Million says those changes were needed because of the volatility of oil prices and their tendencies to rise in the winter.
When it's out of your control, it makes it really tough on your members when those fuel prices go up.
The price of fuel isn't the only cost factor he'll have to consider. The co-op's priority of providing power affordably and reliably are the main factors driving the planned closure of the problem-plagued Healy Unit 2 coal-fired power plant by the end of next year.
The costs to maintain that plant are quite high. The reliability has not been where we had expected it to be when we took ownership of that plant.
Million says a Healy 2 shutdown date will be presented to the co-op's board early next year. Meanwhile, he says work continues on a deal with South Central Utilities to replace most of the coal-fired plant's 50 megawatts with cheaper natural gas-generated power.
However, in the last 6 months or so, there's real concerns with gas shortages in the Cook Inlet.
Some of that electricity could instead come from renewable energy sources through federally funded projects like a new high-voltage submarine cable to transmit more hydropower from the Kenai Peninsula to the Rail Belt utilities.
The cheapest power in the entire state for the Rail Belt right now is the Bradley Lake power out of the Kenai. And so this line would give an additional path of redundancy and additional capacity to move more Bradley Lake power if needed further north.
Million says the strategic generation plan also calls for development of other large-scale renewable power sources to help fill the gap from Healy 2's closure. That includes a proposed 200-megawatt wind farm near Fairbanks. And he says the federal grant that's paying for the submarine cable off the Kenai also will fund large-capacity batteries to buffer fluctuations in wind and solar power. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Good morning. Can I help you?
Public Radio Patrol. May I come in?
I suppose. Public Radio Patrol? What's that?
Well, we drive around in our electric cars in an unofficial capacity, just wearing sustainable hemp clothing, you know, Just keeping an eye on things, keeping an eye on things. I hear you're listening to Morning Edition today.
Yeah, I like to listen to it while I eat my breakfast. Kind of a routine. What's it to you?
Well, the funny thing is, I don't have you down here as a contributor to your local public radio station.
Oh. Well, you know, I haven't gotten around to that yet, but I probably will.
Oh, I see. Well, that's just fine. That's fine. Let me ask you something. Is this your breakfast here?
Yeah.
Is this your bacon?
Yeah.
It certainly looks delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, that is good. It's delicious.
Hey.
I like this. Crispy.
Hey, that's my bacon.
Oh, you don't like that, do you?
No. Well, yes, I like it, but I don't like it when you eat it.
Well, here's $5. Here you go. Take it. Does that make you feel better?
Well, actually, it does.
That's all we're asking. You enjoy delicious public radio. You savor the crispy, in-depth coverage. Just kick them a few bucks every once in a while.
You make a convincing argument. I'll make a contribution to my public radio station, KMXT, and I'm going to call the police now. Just a fair warning.
It won't be the first time. I guess I'll be off now. Thank you for supporting your local public radio station.
You're welcome, I think.
The government's estimate of economic growth over the summer was off a bit. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. The U.S. economy did better than initially thought from July through September, with growth at a blistering annual rate of 5.2%. The initial estimate was just under 5%. Consumer spending and private investment were big drivers. Analysts think that now the economy is slowing. This all could help the Federal Reserve achieve its so-called soft landing, reducing inflation while avoiding a recession. Chicago Fed Chair Austin Goolsbee told Marketplace that depending on inflation's path, rate cuts next year are possible. The timing may be as early as spring, according to Fed Governor Christopher Waller. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Wealth Enhancement Group at wealthenhancement.com.
Kodiak College and partners are offering a free fire and EMS 5-month workforce training program this winter. A great opportunity to learn a new career. The evening classes will start in January, and students will be certified in this field by May 31st. All classes are free and offered locally. Upon completion of the program, students will be awarded multiple certifications that are recommended for entry-level employment as an emergency responder. Applications are due by December 1st. Find out more by emailing kifems@islandgradproject.org or apply online at islandgradproject.org. This program is a multi-agency community partnership coordinated by Island Grad Project and made possible by a grant from the State of Alaska Department of Health, Division of Public Health, and Rural Cap.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 29th day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:24. It will set again at 4:31, giving us 7 hours and 7 minutes of daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 4 seconds. A record high for this date was 2019, and a record low set on this date was 3 degrees, set in chilly 1971 and chilly 2021. Currently a relatively warm 38 degrees. It's lightly raining. It continues to be foggy and misty. At the airport, they are still showing northwest winds to 15, gusting to 30. And they still have a mere 4 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain until 3, followed by rain and snow. High near 38 today, northwest winds to 20, coming up to 25 this afternoon, could gust as high as 35. For tonight, more rain and snow showers. They're not expecting any of the snow to stick, mainly before 9 p.m. for those showers. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 30. West winds to 25 should come down to 15 or 20, but could gust as high as 40 tonight. And for tomorrow, scattered rain and snow showers, mainly afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 37, west winds to 10, turning to the northeast in the afternoon. Taking a peek at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 2:26 this afternoon and be 10.2 feet. And that will be followed by a low tide at 9:23 p.m. of minus 9/10. Or on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:57 p.m., just about 3, and be 15.4 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:51 p.m. of minus 1.8 feet on our west side. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning through tonight. Northwest 30, except north of Dangerous Cape, northwest 30 becoming northwest 40 this afternoon. Seas building to 12 feet this afternoon. For tonight, on our east side, northwest 40, becoming west 25 after midnight with 12-foot seas. And for tomorrow, variable 10 and east winds to 15 knots in the afternoon with 7-foot seas. And even though we are only going to have north winds to 15 knots on Thursday night, they are calling for 9-foot seas coming up to 11 feet on Friday. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight with northwest winds to 30 knots and 5-foot seas building to 8 feet this afternoon. For tonight, northwest 25 becoming west 15 after midnight with 7-foot seas coming down to 3 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. Well, don't miss Friday's edition of Galley Tables. Kodiak storytelling event will be held at 7 p.m. in the Kodiak Marketplace. 7 storytellers have 7 minutes to tell their story based on the theme Breaking the Ice. Doors open at 6:30 and the show starts with music by Drew Sablon at 7. Again, that's doors open at 6:30 Kodiak Marketplace on Saturday. Friday. Oh my gosh. Mark your calendars for Friday for the Patrick Saltonstall lecture as well. That's happening at the Aleutic Museum. No, the Kodiak History Museum. It's the Aleutic Museum's archaeologist, Patrick Saltonstall. He will be presenting the results from the recent archaeological surveys in Santa Flavia Bay. It's free and open to the public and starts at 5:30 p.m. on Friday at the Kodiak History Museum. Also on Friday, it's the First Friday Art Walk. It's already the First Friday again. And that will include events at Double Shovel Cider, the Frame Shop, the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center, Kodiak Island Brewing and Still, as well as the Island Bookshop, Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op, Uncharted Gallery and Gifts, and the Kodiak History Museum. So lots of places to go and lots of great artwork to see on Friday. At Double Shovel, they will be featuring Natasha Zahn. She has some beautiful watercolors, pen, and collages. The Frame Shop will be featuring a gallery sale. You can take 15% off cards and stickers. Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center will feature a paint-your-own winter scene on a wooden ornament keepsake and select a sticker from the recent Youth Art Sticker Contest. That's a free event. Paint-your-own ornament, that sounds like fun. Kodiak Island Brewing and Still will have an artist pop-up from 5 to 7 p.m., The Islander Bookshop will be featuring Jim Dillard. He will be displaying and talking about his greenwood carvings. Bonnie Dillard will be having a collection of 5-year study of her friend Eva Holmes' Setnet site in Uganic Bay. That sounds cool. That's at the Islander Bookshop. At the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op on Friday, Nurka Designs will be featured. They have mostly watercolor ceramics and digital drawings. Uncharted Gallery and Gifts will be featuring Chiniac painter Woody Koning, excellent. That opens at 3 and goes to 7:30. And finally, the Kodiak History Museum will be featuring Objects Uncovered. Aleutic Museum archaeologist Patrick Saltonstall will present results from, that's the same one I just talked about. That's starting at 5:30 on Friday at the History Museum. Also on Friday, the Kiwanis Tree Sales will be starting. They go through the weekend On Fridays, they're open from 4 to 7 p.m., Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sundays from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. That's at the usual place at 111 Bartell Avenue. They're featuring trees, wreaths, mantelpieces, and cedar garland by the foot. Also, the hospital holiday trees are getting going with their ornaments program. Place your loved one's name on an angel for display on the holiday trees in the hospital. They'll be displayed from November 25th through January 13th. Honor the life of someone you miss or celebrate the life of someone you admire. It's a $10 donation for each angel, and you can make your donation in person at hospital admitting or the specialty clinic reception desk. Or you can pay online at www.kodiakhospitalauxiliary.org. Look for their donate button. And don't forget, it's getting closer and closer, the Kodiak Harbor Lights Festival and Boat Parade. Join your friends and neighbors on Saturday, December 16th, and watch the fleet with holiday lights parade through the Near Island Channel. Boats will rendezvous at 6 p.m. north of the Near Island Bridge and proceed south through the channel to Pier 2 in the Outer Harbor. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Wednesday, November 29th, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having its regular meeting in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center conference room at 5:15 p.m. Meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Please contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.